The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCune. This is my pleasure to welcome to the program today David Truong. He joins us on the telephone in suburban Virginia, and he's got a new memoir out. It's called Escape to America, a family memoir. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you. Hi, how are you doing, Vic?
Much better now that we've got you on the phone, David. And this is your first book. Is this going to be your only book? What made you write it?
It's my first book. I don't know about it would be my only or not. And what made I write it? So last year, April 30th, was the 50th year of the fall of Saigon. So I saw things, blurbs about that in the news, and it started making me think about our journey here 50 years ago. Or 47 years ago. And so that made me start thinking about what I had scribbled down, started working on years before. But, you know, the desire to write a book for the 51st anniversary wasn't really the motivating factor. But what happened next was my brother, Tuan, who, if you read the book, is the central hero figure. He's the sort of guy, he's a young guy in his 60s. He never gets hurt. He fell on the tennis court and got injured. And weird thing is, when he sent me his picture in the hospital, I started thinking, you know, if anything happens to Tuan, this really neat story kind of goes with him. Because by this time my parents had passed away. And so that motivated me a little bit more to get serious about putting this all down. And then really then the driving factor was I have two small boys and I did it for them. I was motivated in this way. You know, I feel really blessed that I lived a life where I saw a life that was hard, that could have been my life, contrast to the wonderful life that I got to actually live here. And that shaped my perspective on gratitude, love, faith in God, and I wanted that for him.
You wanted that for your brother?
I'm sorry. I wanted that for my son.
Oh, okay.
For my children.
Okay. You said him. I wasn't sure.
Right. Good clarification.
Oh, okay. Good.
You know, it's not that I don't have first world problems, and unfortunately, I have too many of those. Right. I laugh at myself. Mm. But I always could draw back to what happened and how we got here. To have a good perspective on all the important things in life. And so I wanted to write that, and that's the purpose that really got me to sit down and crank this out. Because for years, I didn't really have a purpose to write this because, I don't know, it wasn't enough to say, I just want to tell people about this story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think once I found a purpose for my children and hopefully more, it came pretty easily.
Okay, so your oldest brother is key to this. He's the guy who knew the whole story because you were the youngest and you were just a little kid. You weren't around for a lot of this stuff. So set this up. Tell us about your family, where you came from. We have listeners out there that don't know anything about what was going on 50 years ago in Vietnam.
Okay. So the historical context and where we were in this is, the Vietnam War, it ended in 1975 with the fall of Saigon, and it was between the North and the South. The South was aligned with the U.S., pro-democracy. The North was communist, right? So my family is from the South. So it begins, really, the account is with the fall of Saigon and a new life, a new way. We lost the war. And that pretty much is where it ended for most Americans. But really, the fall of Saigon is the beginning for most of us in our journey, when us meaning South Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. So what happened there was my parents knew right away, we got to get out of here. And in fact, my dad was a South Vietnamese officer, and he had opportunities to leave with the Americans' evacuation. But for one reason or another, I think he still believed that, you know, in duty, or there's a bigger family that he's entrusted with, meaning his mom and the rest of the bigger family. So he decided not to pursue that. But right away after the fall and how things changed, he quickly realized that perhaps that was a big mistake. So then he was sent to labor camps. And while he was in there, he really put together the plan of escape, right? So once he was able to get out, he put the plan of escape together, and he had Tuan, this is his oldest, who would be the person to carry out the plan of escape. And that entailed us having to go live in a fishing village and pretend to be fishermen, so that we have access to the sea, and when no one's looking, that's when we made the escape. And so he entrusted these things to my two oldest brothers, who were 17 and 16 at the time, to go do all of that while he and my mom tried to secure the boat and everything. So that's really the beginning of the story of escaping to America.
And it gets really complicated because you had multiple efforts to do this, and when it was discovered that this was happening, suddenly we're in the punishment phase again. You talked about your dad being put in these re-education camps. Your older brother and your mother were punished rather severely for trying to escape when the early attempts failed.
Right. So one of the, I think, unique aspects, and maybe it's not too unique, which is before all of this happened, my parents lived in Saigon, and they were far from, you know, fishermen, right? So as best plans they had, they, you know, it's not easy, right? So our first attempt failed, and there's really a lot of interesting things about how it failed, but ultimately we were unsuccessful. So we came back hoping to just, you know, slide back into life and restart. When we came back, the authorities had been suspicious the whole time, but now they were convinced. When we were gone for a little bit and came back, and they apprehended my brother and my mother, and that's the accounts of them being in prison. And so that's the next, I guess, phase of the story.
Mm-hmm. Your older brother, he's a tough guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, but, you know, he's the nicest guy. I always think about, you know, the neighbors that grew up, I mean, that were here and lived next to it. They probably had no idea what Tuan did before he got to the U.S.
And what did he do once he got to the U.S.? I know you're an attorney. What did your older brother end up doing?
So Tuan came over here about 18, 19. So he missed out on going to college. So he started out just doing good work, but, you know, unskilled work.
Uh-huh.
Then he was able to work at a gas station. And I think he would have been fine with it because that's how he is. He just does what's in front of him. But a little bit of fortuitousness happened, which is that's right around the time when the personal computer age happened, late 70s, right? Mm-hmm. So programming. So my dad got into programming, and he helped Juan get into it. He went to like a trade school, or it's called the Computer Learning Center, but you just learn how to program. So without that much education, he could do programming because it didn't require verbal skills, writing skills just yet. So he did that and eventually went to school. And long story short, you know, he had a very nice career as a VP of an IT company.
Nice.
Retired.
Nice.
And of all places, guess where he lives half the year?
Vietnam. No?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Isn't that funny?
No, it's not funny at all, because a lot of people go back. Reverse migration is a big thing.
Yeah.
Whether it's forced or not is the issue in my mind.
Yeah. No, I say funny only in the sense of, you know, the book is about how hard he worked to get out of there.
Sure.
But
well,
there was still a connection.
I'm sure he loves having 6 months of the year back in his native land. I'm sure he just absolutely loves being there.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
He does.
The book is Escape to America, a Family Memoir by David Truong. So he heard himself playing tennis, and you were able to sit down with him and get all this information, because when we read this book and we realize that you're a little boy during a lot of this, we realize that for you to know all this stuff, someone else told you. And I'm guessing he was your main source. Let's talk about some of the issues involved with the escape apparatus as far as the boats. The boats are key in this, and particularly having a working engine.
Yeah. Yep. So the first failed attempt revolved around a failed engine. So there's another story to that, which is my father knew that, you know, these rickety boats that you just piece together, the main issue is if you're crossing the South China Sea, the likelihood is you're going to have engine failure. So one of his tasks in being embedded in the fishing village was to befriend what was there, the best boat mechanic. And he did find one, and he's a marvelous guy, a sweet guy. He had a cowboy hat. That was his distinct mark.
Right.
But they befriended each other, worked on the boat, but Tuan couldn't really tell him what it was they were doing. And then my father ultimately said, the only way we can get assurance of safe passage with the is we bring Hmong along, Hmong the cowboy mechanic.
Whether he wants to come or not.
Whether he wants to come or not.
Right.
Okay. Yep.
That's a key point here, I think.
Yeah. And we justify, or we being my parents, justified the reason is, why don't we just kidnap him? Everybody wants to go U.S.
Right.
So I hope the statute of limitation for kidnapping in Vietnam has passed. But so we did. We kidnapped him, and we explained, look, you're going to be a part of a family. We're going to a great place. All the across Vietnam, people are dying to get out. But like I said in the book, it wasn't our decision to make. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the first lessons is you do something bad, it's not going to end well, I guess, for me. And so anyway, the engine died, but it died in a way that he couldn't fix it because, you know, one of the ruses was to say we were going elsewhere versus going out to sea. So he did a patchwork on the engine, thinking we were going to a smaller route up to Saigon to get some more parts. So when that happened, he just welded some stuff together. And since once we're out to sea, he says, no way, this is going to crack. And everything he said that was going to happen, happened. So that was the main issue with the first attempt.
Well, I love it when the mechanic's out there and you're out in the water and the mechanic admits to the situation with the engine that if anybody had been aware of it, you never would have even left. But we'll leave that to readers to discover. And also, obviously, you did escape finally, and you ended up, after a lot of struggle, you ended up on this island in Malaysia. And I think my favorite part of the story is when you're in Singapore. And what happened in Singapore, this was absolutely fascinating to me, because when you show up in Singapore, I thought to myself, they're not going to like having you show up there.
Yeah. Yeah. So the family was split up, and in the book, I try to explain as best I could why. My dad wanted to have two boats so that the family had two shots at getting out. So in Singapore, I wasn't there on that boat. I was with my mother and other siblings who had made it to Malaysia already.
Uh-huh.
So Singapore is when my father and Tuan, with other families they brought, it was their turn. It was their trip, right? And so when they got to Singapore, which is where my dad wanted to go all along, they saw the shoreline, happily got in there. I think they hit a park and just said, hey, let's dock. And, well, it's not that easy. So the Singapore authorities came, took them back out to sea to say, hey, sorry, we're not taking in refugees. We're going to help you with some provisions, but on your way. So on the way out, my dad, you know, this is the way that he thinks. He's very quick on his feet. He said, let's destroy the engine. That way they'll have to bring us back in. They don't have any choice but to bring us back in and perhaps give us asylum, right?
Uh-huh.
So they did. So for the next 3 days, they were just in a holding facility or something. And, you know, Tuan was just, he liked it. He got to eat and sleep. But 3 days later, they came and said, Mr. Trung, and he, my brother, came out, and they said, I'd like you to take a look at your boat. And so they got on the boat. They showed them the engine that they thought they had destroyed. They didn't just fix the engine. They replaced it with a brand new sparkling one.
Yeah, like, said, get out of here.
Get out of here. And they're not that mean. And like right before that, another kind thing that, you know, and a lot of the book was just finding kind people and nice things happening. The officer that was escorting us out went all around other commercial ships and asked for donations, like provisions for this boat that they're kicking out, right? And so they loaded them up again and said, on your way. And so that's when they got back out into waters and went, I'm not exactly sure how many days, but along that way was when my dad saw a resort, and he said, we're going to beach on that resort. We're not going to mess with the engine. That didn't work. We're going to beach on the resort, and that's what they did next.
Your dad sounds like he was a pretty intense guy.
Yeah, I mean, writing this book, I mean, it took me back. And you know, I was writing it, Vic, and I said, boy, he's complex. He's capable of a lot of good, but really harsh. But anyway, I was like, this makes for a great story, right? But complex characters, you know, it's a different story growing up with somebody like that. We had our moments, right? But I certainly look back and appreciate all that he did for us.
The book is Escape to America, a Family Memoir by David Trung. You're listening to the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. I heard a rumor, David, that you got a little boost writing this from artificial intelligence, and I want you to explain.
Growing up, I wasn't a reader. I watched a lot of movies, right? So I knew exactly how I wanted to tell the story. And what I did was wrote the story and the scenes that I saw. So I wrote it, and I was able to write it by the one author that I read and liked. I basically wrote in the manner, in the voice of the gentleman who wrote Open, right? And so I used that as a template, right? And but what bogged me down was a lot of editorial things, and or how long was this trip, or what did it take? And so AI really helped just smooth out the clunkiness that allowed me to just do the storytelling and tell it in my voice, right? Mm-hmm. And some details that would take, you know, a lot more time to research, I was able to piece together. So I think it's a great tool for any aspiring writers, but, you know, you can't let AI write your story. You're the storyteller.
You use the tool. The tool doesn't use you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and again, I think an ethical use of AI for storytelling or book writing is what editors do, right? I mean, most people write their story, have the voice they want, connect it in the way they want. But, you know, you want to polish that pebble so people can read it. And I think that's what we're already doing with editors. It's just now we have this tool to help.
Okay. My guest is David Truong. And, David, you're an attorney. And I understand that you have a connection with our region as far as how you became a lawyer.
Yeah, I when we came to the U.S., I pretty much stayed here and never left. And so the irony is most people in D.C. area are transplant. But I was the closest to being a local because I came here in 78, never moved. But then I did make a foray. For 3 years, I went to Dayton Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a small period of time, but I will always have a connection to Dayton because that's where I got my legal education, and everything that I've been blessed with since then really started there.
And you are practicing corporate law. Can you tell us about your job?
Yeah, sure. I'm a general counsel for an IT company that provides, you know, software development, other IT services to the federal government. There's never any courtroom drama in my job.
Mm-hmm.
No one's life is at stake for the kind of law that I do. It's a lot more of sitting on Zoom calls. So it's not the kind of legal practice they make movies out of. And if they did, I probably won't go see it.
Okay.
It's a wonderful job.
All
and,
right.
And I'm so grateful to have it to do what I do.
Well, as I was reading this, of course, I look back at the history. I look back at 1924 when President Calvin Coolidge essentially shut the door on immigration in the U.S., and now here we are a century later with an administration that has essentially shut the doors on immigration. 50 years ago, your family was welcomed to the United States, escaping from a bad situation in another land, like so many immigrants today and always in this country, trying to improve their lives, getting away from persecution or poverty or whatever, climate change at this point. And looking at what's going on now, I can remember growing up in Iowa, we had a very moderate Republican governor 50 years ago who welcomed thousands of Vietnamese refugees to Iowa and was happy to have them. We have a situation now where you must be looking at the newspaper and going, gosh, if I tried to come here from Vietnam now, they probably wouldn't let me in.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the issue of our immediate time right now. And in writing this book, there are things, it means certain things for different people, and I certainly have, you know, people on different sides of this current immigration issue reach out and saying, hey, you know, this is inspiring for that. And I'm, you know, on both sides, right? Interestingly. And I would just say this, and I can speak from just my experience and my family's experience, taking aside like the racial component or where you're from, the immigration that we all embrace, that we all love, that is always helpful for our country in the past, is a couple of key ingredients. Is the desire to make this place your home. You put everything you have in your home because you really don't have a place to go back to. So that's like one of the key ingredients. And then the second thing is assimilation. I know that's probably very politically hot topic, but, you know, that's at least our experience. We came to this land. We loved it. We looked to the culture. I never lost my Vietnamese heritage, but my parents, and I think they made the right decision early on in saying, go and, you know, you're now a welcome guest and behave appropriately, just like we would expect you when you go in somebody's home. So I think those are some of the ingredients that is central to the great immigrant stories of all, you know, several different eras that we've, you know, had in the U.S.
Well, as you know, we all have different stories. My dad's parents came here from Lithuania and lived on the south side of Chicago. My dad never spoke a word of English until he went to school.
Yeah.
His parents never spoke English. All they knew were some American swear words that came in handy.
Yeah.
And they assimilated. They worked hard. They were successful. But they lived in a neighborhood where you didn't need to know English. They did learn fluent Polish,
yeah,
because most of their neighbors were Polish. When we force people to speak English, I don't know. Assimilation means different things to different people. We all have different stories, like I say.
Yeah, and writing this book really helps in this way. This is the experience that I had. So generally, you're going to be agreeable to the one that you have, right?
Sure.
But when I wrote this, and I have certain thinkings or certain ways about it, I'm like, well, let's say somebody that disagrees with me on something. And if they wrote a memoir, it will probably look so different. Like, their life story is so different. So if you begin on that, is that wrong that we have differences in background, therefore differences in opinions? Of course not, right?
No.
And I think that's the healthy way. It's just, yeah, just somebody that I disagree would have a totally different memoir than I would, and that's a good thing.
I agree. Well, David, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much for your book and for your time.
Oh, likewise, Vic. I really enjoy talking to you, and I really enjoy the work you do.
Thanks. My guest has been David Truong, his memoir, Escape to America, a family memoir. You heard about it on the Book Nook. Thanks for listening for the Book Nook. I'm Vic McCunis, and thanks for listening to your public radio station.